What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode is basically just Summer League. Going to be talking about the article that I released a couple of days ago, basically grading every single player on the Wizards 15-man Summer League roster. Had some high A's in there, had an F, had a lot of D's and D minuses. So a lot of good performances, a lot of really bad performances, a lot of mixed reaction to some of the grades, whether they were too high, whether they were too low. But I'm going to kind of give my summary of the grades and kind of provide some background as to why I kind of evaluated the players like that. And then I also want to talk about the starting five because I saw a post on Twitter from this dude, Evan Sidery, who I'll talk about him in a second, but it was wrong. It was really wrong. And I want to give my thoughts on who I think as of now the starting five will be. And then we've seen some stuff about Corey Kispert in trade rumors, contract extension rumors, and that's what I kind of want to end the episode with. But without further ado, to jump into what I really wanted to talk about first is my summer league grades. And this is all an article on Bolts Forever if you prefer to read it first before this. But I graded everyone in summer league, and I'm going to start with Alex Saar because he is the most polarizing, the most talked about player from the Wizards in Summer League, and rightfully so. When you're drafted at number two, and I look in the article, I said he's the highest Wizards pick since Otto Porter. Like I don't. Some people were saying that was incorrect. That's not wrong. Like, obviously, they've drafted higher than number three with Otto, but like since Otto Porter means the Wizards at number two, that was the highest that they've been since 2013 when they took Otto Porter. That's what I meant by that. So just to clarify that. Secondly, look, if we're talking about Alex Saar, the grade I gave him was a D plus. Some people said that was too high. I thought it was pretty harsh, considering that he did a lot well, even though he couldn't score the ball to save his life, but he didn't score, and that was the focal point. That's what people are gonna talk about. And it's not just that like he was limited in his offensive game and he didn't try to shoot that much. Like he went 0 of 15 in one game. Like it wasn't a lack of trying, it was a lack of skill, it was a lack of maturity on the offensive end. And that was to be expected if I'm being real, but I just didn't expect it to be this raw or to be this far away from being, even respectable. I thought he was farther along in that offensive development and I guess not. So look, there were times in summer league where Alex Saar was performing well. I mean, the first game he had 12.7 rebounds, shot 4 of 12, which isn't great, but as you saw, that was probably his best shooting performance of the summer league. He wasn't bad, and he had a sequence where he blocked 3 shots in 30 seconds. Like that was evident. The defense was solid, and I'm not going to go out and say the defense was great because it wasn't. There were times where you had defensive lapses from him. He sometimes was late in rotation, sometimes didn't, get the block or protect the rim, and that's going to happen when you. I saw a lot of people like he got dunked on by Cam Whitmore. He got dunked on by someone else. Like when you challenge a bunch of shots at the rim, you're not going to get everyone. You're going to get dunked on sometimes, but more likely than not, he contested the shot, altered it, made it tough for the offensive player, made guards second guess when they went to the paint, saw him whether or not they wanted to go up for the layup, and he blocked 2.5 shots per game. So look, the defense, as expected, was pretty solid. In terms of other positives, I thought his passing, about 3 assists per game. He showed that he can kind of be a hub for the offense. You give it to him up at the top of the key, he's going to turn it over sometimes, but he's also going to make the right pass most of the time. So I thought the passing was all right. And then I thought the rebounding was okay. The first two games, not awesome. He averaged like 5 rebounds. Then the next two games, he averaged 10 rebounds. So the rebounding got better. He was more aggressive on the glass, offensive as well. As Summer League went on, those are the positives. And you know me, I always like to talk about the positives first. The negative is obviously the offense. He shot 0 of 15 that one game against Portland. That was abysmal. The next game goes 1 of 6. Looks like he's scared to shoot the ball. He had problems catching the ball, poor hands. Dribble moves weren't very evident. I mean, I saw a couple of times he went behind the back in the transition, like not bad. He can bring the ball up the court, but it's also not unbelievable. Shooting obviously inefficient. Like the offense was really bad. And to sit here and say that I'm not concerned would be false. It wouldn't be a true statement. I am concerned. This If you're not a little bit concerned after what you saw from Alex Saar in Summer League, you're just delusional. But that being said, it's okay to be concerned without calling him a bust, without saying he's Kwame Brown, without saying he's Anthony Bennett. Like, there's a middle ground that you can that you can reach and that you should be at right now, for a middle ground between concern and downright panic. And I've seen way too many people on the downright panic side. So you got to find the middle ground. It's four summer league games. He obviously played bad, and yes, it's fine if you're concerned, but it's not the end of the world. There's no reason to hit the panic button. If look, like I said, if he was in Atlanta and this was the summer league, you'd be freaking out because you have a window to compete now. The Wizards aren't going to be good for another 3 to 4 years. Why people are panicking before this guy's even suited up for an NBA game is beyond me. I think Reed Sheppard's very good play in summer league has made people panic even more. But look, it's a process. Alex Saar, like the Wizards have always said, was drafted for what he can be, not for what he currently is. You're gonna have to take some time, and you're just gonna have to hope that his offensive game develops, because the defense is certainly there, the size, the athleticism, all of that is there, but he needs to develop offensively, and I believe he will. So a D plus, I feel like, is fair. It's not like an F where he absolutely sucked at all levels, but it's also not like a C or a B where you can say he was average, because I don't even think he was average. I thought he was below average. I thought he, definitely didn't even come close to meeting the expectations that most fans had of him as the second pick in Summer League. So I feel like a D plus is a good grade, kind of in that middle, where I'm not saying that he was okay because he wasn't, but I'm also not saying it was an overt failure. So that's my grade for Alex Saar, D plus. Moving on, Bob Carrington, going from a very low point in Saar to a very high point in Bob, who I honestly thought was not only the most consistent, but just like the best player pretty clearly on the court when the Wizards would play. I gave him an A. I originally gave him an A plus. Shout out, somebody commented this. I gave him an A plus, and they said, yeah, that's fine, but A plus is kind of perfect. And he was pretty inefficient. He shot 33% from the field, albeit 36% from three, but still. I take that feedback seriously, and I change the grade because he's right. Bob Carrington, for as good as he wasn't perfect, and he's not supposed to be. He just turned 19 2 days ago, but his first performance was pretty near perfect. I mean, 19 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists from your 6'5" point guard in his first game of summer league, like that's tremendous. And he was pretty linear, pretty consistent throughout summer league with his stat lines. I mean, at the end of summer league, what was he averaging? Like, let me pull up the stats real quick. I want to make sure I get it right. Through five summer league games, played all five games, 15 points, 15 and a half points, 7.5 rebounds, 5 assists on 36% from three. That's from your number 14 pick. Like that's what you want to see. I mean, the final game, the last game against Milwaukee, he had 15 boards. That's your point guard at 18 years old at the time, getting 15 rebounds to go with 13 points. Pair of steals as well. So like there weren't games where like he would go out and like drop 30 points and 15 assists and all that. But like you saw flashes of every single thing and every reason the Wizards drafted him for. There were games where he shot the ball very efficiently from three. I think the first game he was 4 of 8, 50%. Games where he rebounded very well, like the last game at 15 rebounds. Games where he scored the ball well. He had dropped 20 points, I think, in the third or fourth game. I think at the fourth game of Summer League, he dropped the 20 ball. There were games where he almost had double digit assists. Games where he had steals, where he pushed the ball in transition, found open teammates. And throughout, honestly, what isn't being talked about is the defense, which was very good, pretty much picked up full court, brought the energy. Like I could go on and on about Bub and how great he was in Summer League. But I don't want to do that because there's a lot of people to get through. There's 13 more players. But look, just absolutely tremendous, tremendous, tremendous start. 42% from three through the team's first three games of Summer League. Dropped off a little bit, but that's okay. And look, while Saar looked worse than expected, Bub was better than advertised. And that's kind of what I'm going with here. I think that's been the saving grace for Wizards fans, so they don't jump off a ship because they're so distraught with what they saw with Alex Saar. But look, I think for the time being, and I'm not saying that this is a Wizards won the trade already, I'm just saying for the time being, I think Bub's performance at Summer League quieted some of those Denny Avdia trade critics, And people like me, I'm still frustrated that they traded Denny, 23-year-old, coming into his own finally. I mean, you sit there for 4 years just wanting Denny to turn into what he's become. He turns into what he's about to become, and then you move him. So it's still frustrating, but I think Bub was able to kind of quiet some of those outside noises and critics on that deal for the time being with how great he was. So that was gave him an A. I'd had him an A plus, like I said, but again, wasn't perfect, so I brought him down to an A. Shout out to the person that commented that. But to round out the rookie class, I want to talk about Keyshawn George real quick. I ended up going with a B plus after some deliberation. I had him in an A minus. I had him at a B minus. I settled with a B plus. And here's why. It's a pick that was, I wouldn't say widely criticized, but like it was a criticized selection. People, Terrence Shannon's still on the board. A bunch of really good players, Baylor Shireman as well. Like there were still talent there. And the Wizards decided to go with a more raw upside type prospect in George. And look, everything that I kind of needed to see and why they drafted him in at that spot, I saw in Summer League. The size at 6'7" was pretty, it was visible. I mean, he was guarding multiple positions with that defensive versatility. I'd say pretty much guarded 1 through 4 all throughout Summer League at that size at 6'7", altered shots. He there was that one play against the Kings where he literally rolled his ankle, ran back on defense, and swatted the shit out of Colby Jones. Like the defensive versatility was definitely there, being able to guard multiple positions. And don't even get me started on the 3-point shot, because you don't even have to look at his percentages, which were unbelievable. But like if you look at the shot, it's so pure. The form is smooth. Like it's a very, very fundamentally sound shot. And then you go and you look at, well, it's a good shot. It looks good, but did he make it? He shot 48% from three in Summer League, nearly 50% from three. That's unbelievable. And it wasn't on like 10 attempts. It was on 21 shots. 10 of 21, I'm pretty sure, is what he shot from three. So absolutely incredible. He did basically everything he needed to do. And I think why people aren't as high as I am on his Summer League performance is because it wasn't loud. It wasn't like loud stats or big dunks or big time crossovers. It was just good. It was solid, solid, solid performing. And the thing about George that doesn't jump off the page is like he's a very patient player and plays at his own pace, allows the game to come to him. Whatever the cliche saying is, they all apply to him at just 20 years old. Like the other day he had 9 points. I think he took three shots and made all three of his threes, and he didn't do anything other than that on offense. But like again, it shows me that I'd like to see him shoot more, but he's also not forcing it. He's affecting the game in ways that you're not seeing. And when the shot does come, he knows it's a good shot, and most of the time he's gonna make it. So that's something that I like, that level of maturity, let the game come to him. Again, 7 points in the first game, doubled that to 14 the second game, and I thought he just got better and better and better as Summer League went on. So look, a lot of like about George in terms of the cons. Like the handle needs work, obviously. 6 turnovers in the first game. Turnovers were an issue throughout Summer League. Sometimes he dribble into tough spots, throw bad passes. Like again, young player, it's gonna happen. But that was probably the biggest hole for George. And other than that, I thought he did everything great. Catch and shoot, great. Almost 50% from three. Defended his position well. Defended multiple positions well. Like as a guy that projects to be like a 3-and-D wing, he did the three and he did the defensive wing part perfectly. So again, I understand the turnovers being an issue, but I doubt he'll be a handler, a primary ball handler at the next level. They're probably just trying to try a bunch of things out in Summer League, which is what you're supposed to do. So again, 3-and-D wing, great shooter, great defender, like great size. That's all you need to see from George, and I saw it there. So I mean, I think he definitely proved why the Wizards took him so high at 24, even traded up for him at 24 at that. So I settled with a B plus on George. Thought he had a great Summer League. Thought, Bub and him were solid. Obviously, Alex Saar was not, but again, no need to panic there. The next guy is someone that I'm very happy to be talking about this highly, because I've been a Justin Champagne truther for the longest time, ever since the Wizards signed him. I was like, this guy, I watched him. He's good. He just needs a chance. And he played very well towards the end of last season on a two-way deal. And I think it was Exhibit 10 first, then got converted to a two-way deal. But honestly, like after watching him in Summer League, 13 points, 6 rebounds, he deserves to be on the regular roster. And I think it's pretty clear, you know, Yuji Nomaruhi, who we'll talk about later, I think he didn't have a good summer league. I think he's on a non-guaranteed contract now, taking up a roster spot. You let him go, you waive him. Champagne deserves to get that promotion. You know, alongside Bob, he was the best player on this summer league team. He looked the most polished, and he should. I think he's 24, 25. He's been in the league for like 3 to 4 years now, so he should look like this. But the just because you should doesn't mean like you're gonna look like that. And he did, and I thought he honestly exceeded. I had high expectations for a guy his veteran status, but he exceeded it, and I thought he played very well. Very efficient too. I think he was 8 of 10 one game, 8 of 14 the next game. So like he wasn't just throwing up shots. He was making them efficiently, rebounding, you know, as well. So I think Justin Champagne did everything he needed to do to get that converted from a 2-way to a regular roster spot. The only thing that would, I think, might hold him back from getting that promotion is limited roster space. You know, what maybe the Wizards would keep him on that 2-way deal, and then if you're able to trade Brogdon or Valanciunas or one of the vets at the deadline, then you can move him and convert him and all that. But again, I thought he did everything that he needed to do. Thought he was very, very good. So I ended up giving him an A minus. I didn't give him an A just because there was a little bit of a tail off in the final two games as opposed to the first two games. But again, not that steep of a tail off in my opinion. I thought he was very, very consistent throughout summer league. So I ended up giving him an A minus, one of the highest grades. Alongside Bub and Funk. The next guy is my guy, Johnny Davis. I would say probably not with Sar now, but like probably the most polarizing prospect. And I think it was polarizing for year one and two. A lot of people already out on him, a lot of people trying to hold on to hope. I think it's more now a lot of people out on him. So he's gonna have to prove himself. And look, it's a how do I phrase this? Like, it can be seen, I guess, as like embarrassing because he's a number 10 pick 2 years ago. He's entering his third year and he's still playing summer league. Like, it is what it is. And I credit him because he doesn't have to play summer league, but I'm sure he knows, like, I don't really get many minutes with the NBA squad. Like, I still have to prove myself. Just because I was a 10th pick doesn't mean that I'm gonna be on the roster. And it doesn't, because he wasn't drafted by these new front office members. So his job isn't safe by any means. But look, it's, you know, looking at Johnny Davis, he was solid. Like, I think he averaged like 10 points and like 5 rebounds, only played 2 games. But like those numbers from like a Tristan Vucevic or like a Keyshawn George or someone like that, it's just okay. Like that's a solid summer league. But for a former top 10 pick entering your third summer league, you should be better than that. You should be one of, if not the best players on this team. And he looked like a generic role player on the team. You know, wasn't really creating for himself. There was a couple of really bad plays. I mean, there was one, I think late in the first game against Atlanta, the Wizards won. They just needed to hold the ball up for like 40 seconds left. And he just chucked a three, didn't even hit anything, not even close to the rim. Air ball, other team's ball. Like, there were a lot of bonehead plays and there was a lot of good. I mean, he made a couple of shots from deep, but again, he didn't look like a top 10 pick in year three, which concerns me because he needs to do something to solidify himself as a rotational piece for the future of this team. I think the jury's kind of out that he's going to be a superstar, that he's going to be worth that top 10 pick, but maybe he can transition into like a defensive stopper or somebody like that. But look, it wasn't an impressive summer league for Johnny Davis by any means, and it wasn't a bad summer league at all. But like for a guy like Davis, again, year three, top 10 pick, you should be a lot better than a role player on the summer league team, and he wasn't anything other than that. So look, I still think he's going to make the team. But again, because he wasn't drafted by this current regime, I don't think that's a certainty yet. And I guess we'll have to see. I gave him a B minus. I feel like that's just a pretty mid grade. Like again, wasn't like bad enough to warrant a C, but wasn't good enough to get anything other than a B minus. Pretty okay. You know, I feel like if you show up to the class and do the bare minimum and you look okay, you get a B minus. And that's what I gave Johnny Davis. Look, next guy is Patrick Baldwin Jr., who I've tried to defend. I've tried to stay optimistic on, but I'm done. I can't defend him any longer. And honestly, it's just all on him. It's not due to a lack of opportunity. if it weren't for he had the game-winning three against Sacramento, if it weren't for that game-winning shot, I would have a tough time just like finding good stuff to talk about, finding highlights from PBJ in Vegas because he didn't do much. He basically ran sprints. Like, he's not a great rebounder. He doesn't really get down low and use his size on either end, really, but especially on offense, doesn't put the ball on the deck much. And when he does in transition, he looks good. He had a couple step throughs and Euro steps in transition where I'm like, this is why you need to put the ball on the deck. But he didn't do it. And most of the time, he just settled on the perimeter and jacked threes, and that shit didn't go in. Wasn't even close. Every time Patrick Baldwin Jr. would take a three, I just like close my eyes or pick up my phone and do something else because I know that's not going in. I know it's a brick. And when it does go in, like it did against the Kings, I'm genuinely surprised. And for a guy that's supposed to be a stretch four, if you have the stretch part where you're tall, or that's not what it's supposed to mean. Like you're supposed to be a bigger stretch four, I should say. You have the size, but the shot isn't there. And so you're basically not that great. He's kind of a liability. I feel like all the time he is in the wrong places on defense, fouling a bunch. And then when you go on the other end, you can't contribute by not making any shots. What are you do? What are you out there for? Why are we utilizing your talents or lack thereof? And so it's just been frustrating. And this is what I said in the article. I said the idea of Patrick Baldwin Jr., which is supposed to be a Michael Porter Jr. type of like a stretch floor, you know, great size, great shooter. That idea sounds a lot better than reality. The reality is that Patrick Baldwin Jr. has performed much closer to Jontay Porter than Michael Porter. Because look, Jontay Porter before all the betting and stuff, like he was mid. He wasn't great. Maybe he'd make the occasional three, but like there's a reason he was in and out of the league. Patrick Baldwin Jr. is closer to Jontay than Michael. So look, struggling to make open threes as a guy that really only does that on offense isn't a good recipe for success, and it's not a good recipe for making the roster. Now, I think what helps PBJ is this is one of the worst rosters in the league, and they might have an open spot for him if they want to keep banking on him. Because look, at this point, Patrick Baldwin Jr. turning into anything would be a positive because I'm out on him. And look, if he actually figures the shot out and is consistent with it, that's terrific because he's only 21 and he is a lot of upside still. But it gets to the point where you have to stop talking about upside and start talking about results. And the results for Patrick Baldwin Jr. have not been there, have not even been close to there. So look, I was very disappointed. Again, a guy in his third year, like Johnny Davis, basically entering summer league, former first round pick, multiple years in the league, and you look like a role player on the team. So I gave him a D minus. I was really close to giving him an F, but he made the game winning three. I saw a couple of decent plays from him. So look, it's not to the extent an F means you did nothing and you were terrible. I didn't see no good plays from Baldwin. I saw some good stuff, but again, just disappointing based on how long he's been in the league, and how he looked. You know, it didn't look like a third year player. So gave Baldwin Jr. a D minus. Very disappointed in his showing. The next guy I want to talk about is Jules Bernard, who I feel like is a very hard player to analyze and to talk about because, like, look, can Jules Bernard score the ball? Like, yeah, but will that scoring translate to the NBA? I don't think so. And like you can look at his numbers and be like, well, he dropped 20 points against Sacramento. Like he was great. He was the team's leading scorer. It was one of the best scorers on the floor. How can you say that he wasn't that great? Well, look, you can look at the 20 points, but I'm going to choose to look at the 3 of 9 from three, a team high 6 turnovers, and the fact that he never looks really to pass the ball to his teammates. He seems like a scoring guard, and that's all he really wants to do. And when he tries to pass the ball, it's usually out of a tough situation he's dribbled himself into when trying to score, hence the 6 turnover game. So look, I don't want to say Jules Bernard was bad because he wasn't. He was one of the best players on this team. But I just don't know if he's worthy at this moment of a NBA contract. I think a two-way spot is perfect. The Wizards have a third two-way spot behind Vucevic and Champenny. Again, Bernard's been with the Go-Go for a minute now. I think he deserves that spot. He's played a couple games, I think 8 games for the Wizards in his career. Like, if he cuts down on the turnovers and he becomes more efficient shooting the ball, I think he could be an NBA player. But I think right now he's just a very high-volume shooter. And some games against Sacramento, he'll make a couple shots and he'll lead the team in scoring. In other games, he'll, shoot the team out of the game. So again, I didn't think Bernard was bad. I thought he was one of the better players on the team, and that's why I gave him a B. But again, I don't think you can look at his box scores, just look at the points, and for that to tell the whole story would be fictitious. I mean, he's a good scorer, but he's an inefficient scorer at that, turns the ball over a lot. So I think he's got a lot to work on. I think the go-go on that two-way deal would be a great spot for him. So again, not bad, not mad at the summer league showing from him. I am mad and frustrated at the summer league showing of Tristan Vucevic, and I'm not alone in that because people have flooded my DMs and my mentions on Twitter and all that, just basically asking me, like, what is wrong with Tristan Vucevic? Is it a conditioning thing? Is it a lack of skill? Is it he didn't even do any work on his game? Because look, he looked out of shape in that he played one summer league game, sat out the first one, played the second one, and then didn't show up the final couple three games. Like, it's just he looked terrible. He looked rusty, he looked slow, he looked lethargic. He looked flat. He looked terrible. And that's usually the result of like no legs or having low energy or trying to get back into playing shape. But like he practiced, I feel like, for a week or at least with the rookies. So like he couldn't have been that out of shape. I'm sure he was still doing stuff on his game in the off season, I hope. But look, played one game, went 1 of 6 from the field. I think three of those were from three. All looked flat, all were short. Just very unimpressive. And I'm not the only one that noticed that because every single person was asking me, what is the issue? And I'm like, I don't know if there is an issue. I think he was just bad. And look, I said this in the article. I'm willing to chalk it up to rust, or a lack of shape, which is concerning considering you want him to have a good work ethic. But again, he's on a two-way deal. This would be more concerning if he just got signed to a standard contract, that long term as well. It's a two-way contract. He's gonna play a lot in the G League. He's gonna develop with the Go-Go and hopefully in a year or two, he will be ready to play with the Wizards. This is a guy that's still only 20 years old. You gotta remember that. So look, it's frustrating. I gave him an F. I think he's the only F in this whole thing. And I think rightfully so. Some might call that harsh, but he gave us one game, sat out the other four, and looked like the worst player on the floor for the 14 minutes he played. He didn't do anything well, and that's why I gave him an F. So look, it's the same thing I would have. Excuse me, I would advise Wizards fans with Sar, like, don't panic. This isn't a guy that's like 26. Like, if Taylor Funk looked like this, I'd be like, all right, I'm out. He's 26. Let's move on. This guy's 20. He's only in year two. He had a bad game. And the issue is he had one bad game and didn't play the other one. So like, why would you have him play in the second game and then just sit out the other three? I don't really get it. Maybe there's more to the story. But this is the only story that I've heard of, and that's that I think he played bad, very bad, and maybe the worst on the team. So that's why I gave him an F. Some might call it harsh. I think it's fair. But nonetheless, moving on, Eugene Omorui is 27. He's on a non-guaranteed deal. He shot 1 of 9 in the one summer league game that he played. Had a bunch of turnovers. Didn't look great. Pretty much summarizes why I don't think he deserves a roster spot for next season. Again, like I mentioned, non-guaranteed contract. The Wizards can waive him, cut him for pretty much no financial loss. And I don't think him being 27 helps. I think summer league was pretty much like an audition for Omorui to showcase to the Wizards why he deserves to be on the team. And I don't think he did well in that evaluation. I think he probably failed that test pretty quickly. And I hate it for Omorui because he didn't play much apart from the first game, and you'd like to see him get another opportunity to prove himself because I don't think he's a bad player. I enjoy watching him. I tweet out all the time. At the beginning of last season, the Wizards would get blown out, and then he would come in the game, and the whole tone would change. He'd give max effort, and then you blink your eyes, and the Wizards were down 28. Now they're down 9. I mean, there's no time left, but you can see like he's an impact player. He's good for morale and for the locker room and for energy, but I think that roster spot would probably be better utilized elsewhere. And look, you could always re-sign him to the Go-Go if you want to use a two-way deal. I'm sure he'd be okay. I don't think any of the NBA teams are really going to give him a standard deal. So you can give him another two-way shot and see what he can do. But again, 27 years old with the Wizards going youth movement, a lot of youth they're trying to infuse into the team. A 27-year-old, it with not much upside, really. Kind of a tweener, 6'6". He's not like big enough to play power forward or a really small forward, and he's not quick enough to guard the one or the two position. So it's like, what does he do? And that coupled with being 27, not having a good summer league, I think it all makes sense for the Wizards to move on, especially with a guy like Champagne or Bernard that I think is better than Omoruyi. Younger guys, even that they might like from other NBA teams that they want to poach off them and bring to the go-go. So look, I think he's going to be waived. I gave him a D minus. Again, I feel for him. He barely played after, he had a really bad first game. I don't even think he appeared in the other four. But yeah, not a great summer league for Omoruyi. Now, it was a great summer league for Taylor Funk. And this Taylor Funk is the only guy that I gave an A plus to, and I will defend this A plus because I thought he was pretty damn perfect. I said this is my first sentence in the article. Taylor Funk is Patrick Baldwin Jr. if Patrick Baldwin Jr. actually made threes. If Patrick Baldwin Jr. used, he's this stretch four archetype that can knock down threes, but he doesn't make the threes. At least Taylor Funk has the size and is actually a really good 3-point shooter. Again, one of the best surprises of the summer. I think he averaged 13 points on 50% shooting over the games 3 and 4. And then, I mean, he just went off against Milwaukee. 29 points on 8 threes. And it's not 8 threes on like 30 attempts. It's 8 of 16. That's 8 threes on 50%. 8 of 16 from three. That's unbelievable for a 6'8 forward to shoot that well. And honestly, he made 2 threes down the stretch, two clutch shots to bring the Wizards back and eventually take the lead so that they could beat Milwaukee after a really big fourth quarter. Look, he's 6'8". He's a stretch four. The defense and the lateral movement is probably the most lacking part of his game. But if you can shoot that well at that size, like you have at least a spot with the go-go on a two-way deal, and maybe with the Wizards on a standard deal. Like I said, the defense and the lateral movement you could saw was lacking. The only downside I think for Funk is he's 26. He's a really old, I don't think he's a rookie, but like he was in college for a minute. One of the kids that probably used the COVID year and all that. So he's 26, and obviously for the Wizards, I can't say that Omoruyi doesn't fit because he's 27 and then just change up because Funk is 1 year younger. The age is a factor here, and I think that's the only thing that might hold the Wizards back from giving him a two-way spot. But I do think if anybody on this team prove that they deserve the two-way spots, it's Bernard and it's Funk, and I think Funk played better than Bernard, especially in that fifth game. So I would give Funk the final two-way spot. And if Champagne, they cut Omoruyi, move Champagne onto the standard deal, is another two-way spot, and I'd give it to Bernard. So look, I thought Taylor Funk was phenomenal, and made his threes, did everything that was asked of him, dropped 30 points pretty much in the final game. So A plus for me, no notes. John Butler Jr. is the next guy. I think this is a guy that left college a little too early. He left at 19 years old. Wasn't really even that great his freshman year at Florida State. Went undrafted, signed with Portland. Eventually, signed with the Wizards with Gogo. And look, he's a 7-footer, but like he's like a 7-foot wing. He's a twig. Like the wind would blow him over. He's so skinny. He's 190, 7 foot, but 190. For reference, I think I at my last doctor's appointment I was 5'8", 5'8½". I'm gonna throw in the half, 5'8½", and I think I weighed 155. So like, this guy is a pretty much like almost a foot and a half taller than me and weighs like 30 pounds more than me. So like that's an issue, and you can see it pretty visibly when he plays. Like, he'll get bullied down low if you try to put him on a power forward or on a center. He's not a great rebounder, especially when like if the ball comes and it's a jump ball, he can get it because he's long and athletic. But if it comes to a box out battle, he's gonna get pushed into the bench. Because he has no muscle on his arm, upper body or lower body. Like he's a stick figure. And that's why it's hard, because he's a 7-footer and he moves very well. I'll give him that. He moves great for a 7-footer. But like, it's just like, where do you play him? Does anybody have a need for a 7-foot wing? It's like Bol Bol, but like Bol Bol is taller than him and is better than him. And Bol Bol can't even find a spot really in an NBA rotation. So like, why would John Butler? And look, I think he was okay. There was a couple times like he made his first two corner threes against the Bucks, and I was like, okay, maybe we have something here. And then he just started bricking top of the key threes, like back straight backboard, not even like rim, straight backboard from these John Butler threes. So like he just jacks up threes. Sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. Most of the time they don't. And when he doesn't do that, he has no interior game, no off the dribble game. So like I don't know what he is. And it's not like he's a great defender either. You'd think at his length he'd be swatting shots left and right, but he's not. So again, it went about as expected. Like he made a couple threes, missed a lot more than he made. Wasn't a great defender, so I think he's a go-go candidate. I don't think he's an NBA player. Especially now. I think he could be if he eats some food, gets in the weight room, and makes that shot more consistent. But right now he's not even close. So I think re-sign him, keep him with Gogo, get him in the weight room, see if he can develop. But I gave him a C plus again. I didn't think he was terrible, but I didn't think he was great either. The next guy, Marquese Noel, is that was probably one of my favorite, if not the favorite, like just watching pure viewership players, because like he's 5'7". He's smaller than me. And I can only imagine how terrible I'd be against these bigger dudes. But he was like solid, at least in the first couple games. He didn't play games one and two, barely played game three, but he played a lot in game four. And he was solid, finding teammates with some really great passes. I think he made a shot as well. So like you gotta take it a grain of salt because like 5'7", it's very tough to play amongst these 7 foot beasts, but he held his own. Game five was a struggle for him against Milwaukee, against the length that they have on the perimeter. You know, just got into no man's land, a lot of turnovers. And you saw, I think, against Milwaukee why he hasn't necessarily gotten a fair shot in the league. And what sucks about him is like he's a very intelligent player, very good floor general. You could saw it. I mean, he dropped 20 and 20 in the tournament against Michigan State when he was with Kansas State a couple years ago. But it's just like you can see why the size is limiting him. Which sucks. Like it's something he can't control, that, you know, how small he is. But nonetheless, like I think he could be a very fun player to watch for the Go-Go. I'm not gonna say I don't think he's an NBA player because you never know. I mean, you saw Isaiah Thomas absolutely torch the Wizards, and I think he's like 5'9". But I was able to like kind of see why he hasn't gotten a fair shot yet. So you know, maybe he signs with the Go-Go. Plays well for them. Hopefully, you know, he gets an NBA shot because he's a fun guy to watch and root for. You know, it's not hard. It's not easy to make the NBA or the G League even, let alone at 5'7". So, you know, respect. I give him a C plus. Again, same thing as Butler. Like he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't like phenomenal either. So I settled on a C plus. Next, we're down to basically three guys: two that played, one that didn't. I'll start with the two that played. Eric Stevenson, former West Virginia Mountaineer. Bigger guard, both like height wise and like strength wise. Barely played the first two games. Games three and four, he was great. 8 points on 75% from the 3-point line. Again, really tenacious defender. But the thing, again, 25 years old. Unless you're Taylor Funk and you go absolutely nuclear, you know, being that old, it's a tough scene for a team like the Wizards that are trying to go young. So look, I thought Stevenson did pretty much everything he could to improve his stock. I think I'd love to see him on the go-go. I think he'd be a great 3-and-D guy. But I give him a B plus. Like I thought he was one in terms of the back of the bench guys that I didn't really expect much from. He was probably the best out of him. He was very good, him and Funk. So I really like what I saw from him. Just, you know, didn't play much, but when he played, you could feel his presence, you could see his impact. So I don't want him to go unnoticed. To give him a B plus, I thought he was great. Tyler Robertson, again, I think he only played in the fifth game, which you hate to see. You want him to get an opportunity, but even when he played, he was pretty unimpressive. You know, clearly not a non-athletic big man, more of like an imposing, like I guess he could be like a power forward in the league, but just didn't see much on either end. Didn't see much in terms of rebounding, low post play, defensive talent. Like I didn't see much. So I gave him a D. Again, I didn't even want to give him a grade because I feel like it was unfair. But that's what I settled on. Then the last player, Jared Butler. If he played, he'd be the best player on this team. Again, that's a guy that I think should get big minutes at backup point guard this year. Played very well at the end of last year. Got rewarded with a standard deal for the NBA, for the Wizards. But didn't play at all in summer league. Pretty much just went to Vegas, was on the team and spectated. But again, not mad at that. I'm sure they wanted to see a lot of Bub at point guard. They wanted to see some of the other dudes. They know what they have in Butler. Butler played against the Wizards with the Thunder in last year at Summer League, and the Wizards signed him off their team because he was so good. So again, not mad at Butler not playing, not necessary. But that's my summation of the Summer League. I hope it was a good summation. Look, a lot of good grades. I mean, I think stock in terms of like stock rising, Bub, George, Champagne, Keller Funk, very, very good summer leagues. You could throw Stevenson in there. In terms of stock down, Tristan Vucevic, Omaruyi, Alex Sarr, like those are guys that I thought just weren't good at all. And I Sarr at his moments, but like they were way below expectations. That's kind of what I want to say. And so those are the guys that had their stock down. The other guys were pretty average, I'd say. Not awful, not terrific. But that's kind of the summation of what you saw at Summer League. And so that's the first part of what I wanted to talk about today. The next one is something I saw on Twitter, and my guy Troy Halliburton commented on this as well, which made me, I was gonna put out a tweet, but I didn't want to, I didn't even want to give the person that put it out the time of day. But like if you're on Twitter, there's a lot of accounts that like post stuff and breaking news. You have your journalists, and then you have like your, I guess it's called aggregators, that basically will just be like reposting it, but like the Wizards signed Jonas Valanciunas per at Woj, and it's like they don't, it's like it's their own. And, like I will do that from time to time for the Wizards, but like I will obviously credit whoever wrote it, and I will also give analysis on it. Most of the time, I'm not even going to really tweet out that because, like, you follow Woj and Shams. You don't need me to repost it. What I like to do when that happens is post analysis, like my thoughts on Valanciunas, because I feel like that's why people follow me, is because they want to know my thoughts. I'm not here to break news. But this guy is an aggregator. He basically, Evan Sidery, just like goes and reposts what people do. If somebody writes an article, I know Josh Robbins has said it a couple of times, like he'll write an article, and then this guy, Evan Sidery, will read the article with a subscription and then basically just post to his followers what Josh reported. And then there's no point in anyone paying for the Athletic subscription to read Josh's stuff because Evan just ruined it for everyone and just spoiled the article. So that's what this guy does. He really doesn't offer much in terms of actual NBA coverage or actual NBA analysis. It's basically just impression farming and aggregation. So I don't really vibe with this guy. But that's how you get followers nowadays, so I understand it, I guess. But he's been doing this series on Twitter where he's projecting the rotations for certain teams, starters and second unit. And again, this is a guy that I don't think is a, specializes in any team. He just kind of reposts other people's work. So he's been doing this series, and it was the Wizards the other day, and he put out this starting rotation. He predicts the Wizards will start Jordan Poole, Bilal Coulibaly, Kyle Kuzma, Alex Sarr, and Jonas Valanciunas. And first, I want to start with that because there's so much wrong there. Number one, I don't think Sarr is going to start. Number two, Kyle Kuzma is a power forward. Number three, I think they will start Bilal like they have been at small forward, meaning that you need to start somebody else shooting guard. That's out of the way. I like this guy. I think he was all wrong in terms of, his rotation. Even in the second unit, he didn't put Rashawn Holmes there, who the Wizards just re-signed for $13 million a year, as if they're just not going to play him. So again, a lot wrong with what that guy tweeted out. My guy Troy Halliburton even commented and said that's just completely wrong. So I agree, and it made me want to come on here and give you my prediction on the Wizards starting five. And look, obviously there's a lot to be seen here, but if the season started today, and no other moves would be made, this is who I think the team will start. And again, not who I think they should start, but who I think will start. Jordan Poole, starting point guard. At shooting guard, Malcolm Brogdon. Small forward, Bilal Coulibaly. Power forward, Kyle Kuzma. And center, Jonas Valanciunas. Now, there's a couple questions that you want to kind of take into consideration. I feel like a lot of people might have for me in terms of what I just said with my starters. Again, that's Poole, Brogdon, Coulibaly, Kuzma, and Valanciunas. Look, in terms of like, does Sarr start? Like, yeah, you drafted him number two overall, and you're not even going to start him, even though you're going to be the worst team in the league. Like, Some guys just aren't ready to start yet, no matter where you drafted them. I mean, they drafted Bilal seventh. That's only five spots lower than him, and then Asar, and Bilal didn't start for a bit. Because there's players that are better than him. And again, teams might be tanking and rebuilding, but they're always going to try to put the best product on the floor, especially early in the season, to try to build trade value. So, like, again, it's tough because I think Alex Saar isn't a center. I think he's a power forward. He's certainly not a small forward. And I don't think Kyle Kuzma's a small forward. I think he's a power forward. So where does that leave you? That I think leaves you with Kyle Kuzma starts at the four and you move Saar off the bench. And that might be the best thing for him. I mean, Alex Saar might be a guy that just takes time. And maybe throwing him into the fire right away against the top-notch starting power forwards isn't the way to go. I also don't know if it's best to play him alongside Valanciunas. I don't know what that looks like. So I think Alex Saar comes off the bench to start, and I think that's why you have Kyle Kuzma where he should be at power forward. I mean, you got to remember, Kuz is 6'10". Like, he's not like a smaller forward. He's a big dude. And so I think a power forward makes sense. Saar comes off the bench. The next question: should Brogdon play alongside Poole? Like, both have played point guard the majority of their career. Why should you play two point guards alongside each other? And to answer that question, like, I think Brogdon's actually a better fit alongside Poole than you think. What Poole lacks, I think Brogdon has. What Brogdon lacks, I think Poole has. Now, Brogdon isn't a tremendous 3-point shooter. He's not really known for that, but he can knock him down. And Jordan Poole, as you saw at the end of last season, is known for 3-point shooting. Jordan Poole, known as not that great of a defender. Malcolm Brogdon, known as one of the best perimeter defenders. So I think they kind of complement each other. And I think, again, if Poole's the point guard and he swings it to Brogdon for three, I think Brogdon will make a lot more than you think. I think he shot like 39% with Portland, so like he's still got it. And he's a guy that I value on the defensive end as well, to kind of make up for what Poole lacks on that side. So I do actually think Brogdon's the best to play alongside Poole. The question right after that kind of plays off of Brogdon. It's is it Bilal or Corey as that fifth starter? Because I think it's pretty, Poole, Kuz, and Valanciunas definitely starting. And then it's what do you do with the other two? I think Brogdon definitely starts. They'll try to build this trade value. But like, is it Corey or is it Bilal at small forward? If you ask me right now, I honestly, who's better, Corey or Bilal? That's actually a good question. Because obviously Corey's a way better shooter and a better cutter and I think a better offensive player. But like, Bilal is a way better defender. So like, it's tough to answer that question. I think Bilal is obviously the centerpiece of this team right now, and they're going to do everything they can to give him reps. So I think he will start at small forward. I think he will round the team out defensively. And then when you go off the bench, you'll have some shooting and offense with Corey as that sixth man. I think that's a role that's better suited for Corey than it is for Bilal, which is why I have Bilal at the three and Corey as a sixth man off the bench. Another question, I already answered this, but like, can Kuz play small forward to allow Saar to start at power forward? Again, I don't think so. I think that's stupid because, again, Kyle Kuzma is a power forward, and I think he should play there. And again, for Alex Saar, you could force him to play at power forward alongside Kuz and Valanciunas, but I don't know if that's the best to have, like, two him and Valanciunas, two pretty much rim protectors. And yes, Saar can guard, a lot more versatile than Valanciunas, but you'd like to have him as your rim protector in Saar. You don't want him playing on the perimeter. And I think it's best if he comes off the bench. And then he can play alongside a Marvin Bagley, who I actually think is a power forward and not a center. And at that point, you can kind of play both of them. And again, if it's not Bagley and it's Holmes, you can play him with Holmes as well. So there's a lot of questions in terms of that. But I think my starting five: Poole, Brogdon, Koulibaly, Kuz, Valanciunas. That's who I think the team will go with. And honestly, I think that's who I would go with. Again, you might hate Brogdon starting over Bub. Right now, Brogdon's a much better player than Bub, of course. And I think when you're looking at a team and you're trying to develop talent, again, I lead you to look at last year when Bilal Coulibaly and Denny Avdia and other guys, like, they didn't look that great at the very, very start because they were playing alongside guys like Mike Muscala and Danilo Gallinari, who are terrible on defense and didn't offer much on offense. And once they get rid of those guys, Denny Avdia looks absolutely tremendous. Bilal Coulibaly looks a lot better on defense, and the team looks a little bit better as a whole. And I think in order to properly develop players, you need to play them with competent teammates. And I think Bilal and, playing alongside Brogdon, Poole playing alongside Brogdon, a guy like Sarr playing behind Valanciunas, those are all things that are only going to help this team. So that's why I settled on that. And I know a lot of the pushback will be, well, what is Bub going to do? What about Keyshawn George? Like, does he even play? Bub will play 100%. He'll come off the bench. I probably has that. I don't know about backup point guard, but like, what if you play him alongside a guy like Jared Butler? I think that could work. And it's possible that Bub beats out Butler and is your backup point guard, and Butler doesn't play much. And that's fine. You want open competition. In terms of George, again, young player, very raw, needs to develop. Maybe he sees some time at the back end as like that eighth or ninth man. But again, like, you look at him like, well, if he's playing, where's Johnny Davis? He's not playing at all. If Johnny Davis is playing, I don't know if George has a spot, but I think George could be a guy where maybe he doesn't play early on, but once some trades are made and, the younger guys are able to step up after the deadline, you'll be able to see Keyshawn George in a bigger role. So I wouldn't be too concerned about him to begin with. I think Bob and Sarr obviously will play rotation minutes, probably off the bench, and George will get inserted later on into the season. So that's my starting five prediction. Again, if you missed it, Jordan Poole at the one, Brogdon at the two, then Koulibaly, Kuzma, and Valanciunas to round out the group. I think that's the team, the lineup that gives the team the best chance to win. And I know, oh, why do you want to win? You want Cooper Flagg? Don't put You're gonna put out the team that's gonna have the best chance to win. And again, I said this isn't the people that I prefer to start. Obviously, you'd love to see Bub start. You'd love to see George start. But again, this is what I think is ultimately going to be the five that they put out opening night, whoever they play. I mean, they played Indiana the last 2 years, so the Wizards will probably play some low-profile team on the road because nobody cares about them. And I guarantee they won't play the first night. They'll play the second or third night of the opening season because, again, no one cares about this team. So, well, from the media perspective. And so that's the starting five. I talked about Summer League already. The last thing I want to talk about is Corey Kispert, extension eligible, could pretty much sign it at any time now. But what made me want to talk about this is Sam Hauser for the Celtics sharpshooter. He just signed 4 years, $45 million. Again, I don't know how the Celtics have all this money. It seems like they've given contracts to everyone on their team. But that's like a 10.5 mil, I think, or 10.25 million per year. I don't know what the values are, whether it's ascending or descending values. But roughly, that's like 4 years, like 11.2 million per year. Very, very reasonable deal. And again, I think this could be a fair deal for Corey. Like, Sam Hauser just won a title as one of the best bench performers and contributors on the Celtics. Corey Kispert is the sixth or seventh man on the Wizards. It's a little bit different. But I think is it's again is Corey Kispert better than Sam Hauser? I don't know. I think they're pretty. I think they're kind of similar players. If you asked a team, would you rather have Corey Kispert or Sam Hauser? Again, I don't know. I think they'd tell you they're, either. I think they're great shooters and they're going to be on cheap deals. So I think this 4 years, 40 mil, 4 years, 45, like around that realm is probably what I'd expect for a Corey extension. Again, the Wizards had a similar situation with Deni Avdija, didn't sign him until right before the season in October. So I think October is probably where you could see Corey sign. But again, there's been a lot of trade rumors for Corey. I don't know. I think he's 20, 24. Drafted not by this front office. Been here for a minute now. Do they extend him or do they look to move him at the deadline on an expiring deal? I don't know. I'd prefer to extend him. I think Corey is still young. It was the same for Denny. I didn't want to trade him either, but I would understand it. So I think 4 years, 45 mil is a great deal for Corey. I think if he does sign, it'll be in October. But again, he's been in trade rumors. So you never know what the team's going to do, but that's going to do it for this episode. Hope it was informative. I hope you didn't disagree too much with my summer league grades. I thought they were pretty good myself. Definitely not biased there. That's my starting five. Again, let me know if you like it or you don't. Some people might hate that I don't have Bub in there. Some people might hate that I don't have Sarr in there. But again, that's who I think they'll try it out on opening night. And then again, talked about Corey. I think if they do extend, it'll be similar to that Sam Hauser deal, 4 years, 40 million. And if they do, it'll be in October, but that's still to be seen. So, that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate all for listening. That's kind of gonna do it for this off season. Like, summer league's done, the draft's done, free agency's pretty much done. The only thing I'd say to look out for is the Tyus Jones situation. I really don't think the Wizards will re-sign him, and I'd be pretty frustrated if they did. I don't think there's really any role or any room for him. But that's one to monitor. And other than that, I don't think anything's gonna be going on until training camp in like late September, early October. So pretty dormant. Especially for me, I'm gonna try to find some fun things to do. Maybe have some fun guests on the pod. In the meantime, but this is kind of the most dead part. The schedule will come out at some point in mid-August, I believe. And that'll be fun for about 20 hours and then not really important. So again, kind of a dead period that we're entering here. I'm gonna try to make some fun podcast episodes to pass the time. But again, that's gonna do it. Appreciate all you guys for listening. Go Wiz.